KALW.
The idea is to get 17 Oakland residents together to brainstorm ways to change how public safety is budgeted.
Oakland officials are launching a task force to reimagine public safety.
This, of course, is a direct response to activists who have been protesting on the streets in the city for months for Black Lives.
We hear about Bay Area city leaders taking a hard look at police budgets. Then cellist Joshua McLean sparks people's imaginations with his mystic sounds.
I get people coming up and talking about the visions they saw in their head while listening to it, and that's like the biggest compliment.
And we hear how the town got its colors.
Oh yeah, those are also the color of the A's. I wonder if green and gold are sort of a characteristic color of Oakland.
That's coming up. I'm Henat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. The movement to defund police has forced Bay Area officials to take a hard look at their budgets in recent weeks. But radically transforming policing won't happen overnight. In Oakland, it turns out that reducing the police budget by 50% will take at least one task force and possibly up to 2 years. And on Tuesday night, the Oakland City Council unanimously voted to move in that direction. KALW Justice reporter Holly J. McDee joins me now to explain. Hey, Holly.
Hi, Anna.
So, Holly, what exactly did Oakland officials vote on Tuesday?
So the Oakland City Council voted to create what will be called the Reimagining Public Safety Task Force. As you can maybe tell by the name, the idea is to get 17 Oakland residents together to brainstorm ways to change how public safety is budgeted in Oakland. This, of course, is a direct response to activists who have been protesting on the streets in the city for months for Black Lives. The specific goal of the task force is to come up with a proposal to reduce the Oakland Police Department's budget by 50% sometime within the next 2 years. And the community organizers leading the effort to defund the police say that money should instead go to alternatives to policing, like housing, healthcare, mental health services, jobs, homelessness. And they feel like that's the best way to keep the community safe with those kinds of services. They argue that too much of the city's general fund is going to the police. So right now, OPD makes up about 44% of the city's general fund budget. So the idea of the task force, again, is to see if there is a better way to budget public safety in Oakland that doesn't include or includes less of the police department.
And as expected, there has to be some opposition to this goal of reducing the police budget by 50%, right?
Absolutely. Not everyone supports reducing the police budget in this way. And keep in mind, efforts to reduce Oakland's police budget recently failed.
But Mayor Libby Schaaf was not on board. Why?
So Mayor Libby Schaaf, she said that Oakland has historically had substandard dispatch response. And she said that the police department has the lowest officer per crime staffing in the nation. And she said that reducing policing would compromise the city's commitment to equity, given that predominantly African-American and Latino neighborhoods are disproportionately impacted by crime in Oakland.
So, Holly, let's go south to San Jose, where the mayor there has also rejected calls to defund the police department for similar reasons. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's right. So San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo, he's expressed similar concerns that reducing the police budget there will put poor communities at risk and delay response times for those communities even more. So the San Jose Police Department has actually dealt with chronic understaffing for a while. So instead, Mayor Liccardo has proposed a series of different reforms for the city. For example, he's called for a public demographic database of everyone stopped and detained in San Jose. He's called for a ban on rubber bullets in all crowd situations. And he's called for transferring authority to investigate police misconduct to an outside auditor who he wants to have more power to investigate these claims. So he's proposed a number of reforms, but many of the activists and families of victims of police violence in San Jose say that the city has already tried reforms. They've already tried better training. They've already tried more body cameras. And they say that that has not worked. And so for many of the activists working on these issues, defunding the police is still the long-term goal.
And a lot is going on in other major cities in the Bay Area, including San Francisco and Berkeley, where, I mean, they've done what's considered to be the first proposal in the country to remove police from traffic stops, which is a big deal. Can you tell us more about Berkeley and then San Francisco?
Yeah, absolutely. So the idea in Berkeley is that minor traffic stops, they don't warrant an armed response, that there can be another way of handling those responses, which have turned violent and deadly in different cities across the country.
Right. We're talking about your taillights out, things like that.
Exactly. So under Berkeley's proposal, routine traffic stops would be carried out by unarmed civil servants in a new department that Berkeley would need to set up.
And what about San Francisco?
Yeah, so in San Francisco, Mayor London Breed and Supervisor Shimon Walton have pledged to redirect funds from the city's police budget towards the African-American community. That proposal, there aren't many details yet on how that will work exactly, but it's a broad gesture, and it will start to take shape, and we'll start to learn more about what that could look like when Breed introduces her budget in August.
Yeah, a lot of people are wondering about how that will play out, and I'm sure you will let us know. Thanks, Holly.
Thanks, Sanaa.
That was KELW Justice reporter Holly J. McDeed. Find more of her reporting at KELW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. A lot of people are looking for a mental escape right now. That's where Oakland musician Joshua McLean may be able to help. He's a cellist who composes songs that make listeners feel like they're in another world. His mystical sound is a blend of electronica, classical music, and rock. Joshua has played at venues around the world, and he performs regularly with the Handsome Brunettes. His latest album, Coming Home, is inspired by the story archetype, The Hero's Journey. KALW's Janae Darden spoke to Joshua after zoning out to some of his songs.
The inspiration behind your work ranges from Yo-Yo Ma to Jimi Hendrix. What inspired you to create that kind of sound?
Yeah. So I think the best thing for me is that I didn't go to music school. I mean, it's good and bad. Like, you know, my chops aren't nearly as great as like a concert cellist. But at the same time, because I didn't go to music school, I was playing in like rock bands and reggae bands. And I lived with like a blues guitar player, and we had a blues harmonica player living in this attic apartment behind us. He was like drunk all the time, but we would jam. And so I was jamming with like blues guys who, you know, played really dirty. And so Yo-Yo Ma was my hero when I was younger, and he still is today. Actually, my son's name is Yo-Yo. And so it's that element of like appreciating the cello for being a classical instrument and still listening to classical music. But I really like to turn on some nasty sounds and add in some distortion and dirt in there too.
Yeah, it's really beautiful how you do that. And what other instruments are you playing, you know, to give it that electronic sound as well?
On my album, there's a couple songs, I think, where I play electric guitar and also the baritone ukulele. But for the most part, I get the electronic sounds from my cello. I go through a guitar effects processor, and then I run that through a looping pedal. And so I use all kinds of like delay and distortion and reverb and different sounds like that.
It's funny because I listened to your music, so I was, you know, because with all the chaos going on, and I was feeling very anxious. And then I was listening to your album, and it immediately just really calmed me down. So thank you. Do you zone out to your music?
I listen to my albums enough that I don't just like turn them on to hang out, you know. But when I practice, I'm definitely like getting into this sort of meditative state. And so practicing is it's not always relaxing. Actually, it's kind of like an intense therapy session. Like I'm really, you know, process a lot of stuff when I'm playing. And so usually when I'm performing, it's like people are witnessing like a therapy, it's like, hey, this is Josh's therapy session. Because it is very cathartic for me. That's kind of the most honest way that I process my emotions is by playing the cello.
Do you write the music before, or do you just play and then you find a song that way?
I'm not just like composing melodies in my head. A lot of it comes from improvising while I'm looping. And then like listening to the loop or the melody that I've recorded and like fine tuning the melody. And so like when I perform my album, very little of it is improvised.
Yeah, because your music, I know, has been described as otherworldly. And so when I listen to it, I just go into just a really, just in my head, like a really magical, mystical place.
Yeah, totally. I get people coming up and talking about the visions they saw in their head while listening to it. And that's like the biggest compliment, is because I really want to be able to take people on a journey. And that means different things to different people. And so, you know, I have my own vision of what's happening in the music. But to hear somebody else's interpretation, I'm like, whoa, that's like, I was not thinking of that, but I'm glad that you were, you know.
You mentioned journey, and I know that's a theme in this album, Coming Home, but you've had your own personal journeys. Like, you journeyed to California, and you were working in tech, right, when you came out here?
No, my first job was working for St. Anthony Foundation in the free clothing program, and so I was giving clothes to the homeless people in the Tenderloin. And then my second job was then working at Indiegogo, where I worked for the crowdfunding startup for 3 years. And it was great. You know, I've learned a lot about marketing, but I felt the San Francisco tech world can be difficult. And so it kind of crushed my soul. And so right before I recorded this album, I quit my job. And I always do this. I save up like a nest egg, and then I quit. I'm like, oh, I have like this amount of time to figure out what's next. And so I went to Peru into the middle of the Amazon jungle and drank ayahuasca for a month. And that was pretty intense. Like, I felt like it was going to kill me. And then I came back home.
And you said it's called what again?
Yeah, ayahuasca. It comes from the jungle. It's comes from the ayahuasca vine and the chacruna leaf. And there are two different plants that grow next to each other in the jungle. Neither of them by themselves are hallucinogenic. You have to combine them. You drink this in the rainforest. And the ayahuasca vine is actually a purgative, so you get very sick. You're vomiting. For me, I was releasing a lot of trauma through my body. And so I was shaking violently, like having a seizure, but like fully aware for quite a few of the ceremonies, and then seeing demons. And so it's this really like very intense experience. It's not for everybody. And if you have any underlying conditions of like bipolar disorder or schizophrenia or borderline personality disorder, it wouldn't be a good medicine for you. It could be very dangerous.
And this inspired your album, Coming Home.
Yeah. A sort of a psychedelic journey. But it's very, the album feels very grounded, and it's really trying to tell the hero's journey of going down into the underworld, into the shadow, to sort of experience this death where like this old version of you that doesn't serve you very well dies, and then you come back kind of bearing new gifts, like this bad part of me has been shed, and now I kind of know, I have a better understanding of my true essence, and I'm going to bring that to the world. And so that's kind of what I try to do with the music, is to use not psychedelics, but music to take people on sort of a journey into themselves.
That was cellist Joshua McLean speaking with KELW's Janae Darden. His latest album is Coming Home, and you can watch Joshua perform meditative sounds every Tuesday and Thursday mornings at 8:30 on his Facebook page. We'll have a link up at KELW.org. ¶¶ This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Next, we've got a Hey Area short where we give bite-sized answers to the questions you ask. Listener Mark Pritchard wondered about the city of Oakland's signature colors. KELW's Marco Seiler Gonzalez set out to find the answer.
As an Oakland native, when I think of the colors green and gold, I think of the Oakland A's.
The A's have won the game!
And I'm not alone. One day, Mark Pritchard walked by an Oakland park and saw a green sign highlighted with gold lettering.
Oh yeah, those are also the color of the A's. I wonder if green and gold are sort of a characteristic color of Oakland.
Oakland's color pattern was actually set in 1952, more than a decade before the A's came here. That year, for Oakland Centennial, the city council had a contest to design its official flag. Dorothy Lazard works at the Oakland History Room in the main public library. She has a whole folder just for the Oakland flag. And the winner of the design contest and the $200 grand prize? A guy from San Leandro named George W. Loxo Jr.
I think it's really interesting that it was somebody from San Leandro who designed the flag as opposed to an Oaklander.
Loxo's design shows a green oak tree against a gold background.
What some kids have called the broccoli, but it's supposed to be an oak tree.
The color scheme does seem self-explanatory. Again, Dorothy Lazard.
I'm gonna side with my coworker Ron, whose best guess was the golden hills and green for the green trees. You know, Oakland was heavily forested in its early days.
And that makes sense. If you look between the stilted houses on Oakland's hillsides, you can still see the familiar pattern of golden patches between green trees.
That was Marco Seiler Gonzalez reporting for our crowdsourced journalism project, Hey Area, where you ask the questions and we find the answers. And right now, here's what we want to know from you. What are the most important issues in your neighborhood? What do you want to know ahead of the 2020 elections? You can ask your question at klw.org/heyarea. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Bay Area authors have had to cancel launch parties and book tours because of the coronavirus, so we're bringing them to you in a series we're calling New Arrivals. Today we hear from author Elwin Cotman, who lives in Oakland, reading from his new short story collection, Dance on Saturday. Here's Elwin.
It's about many things, including a zoology conference, people who make their body parts from fruit, an origin story for Prince, you know, the typical things. Here's one of my favorite parts from the final story in the collection, which is called The Piper's Christmas Gift. Atop the sewers in cobblestone, Herald Square was. Under the thickening snow, Herald Square was. Mary was. Sarah was. The girls walked West 34th Street with a pace born of necessity, dodging the pointed-toed shoes that lunged their way. The men who loomed above wore bowlers and overcoats, their carpet bags bulging with gift-wrapped boxes, and the snow that adorned their fur-clad shoulders made them look a little different from Yetis. The beleaguered expressions women must have worn as they hitched their walking skirts over slush puddles were concealed behind veils pulled down from their feathered hats. More and more of them came, stepping off horse-drawn streetcars that moved single file down the street to add their energy and money to the overflowing cup of commerce. Mary clutched a small sack holding her precious cargo to her chest, as tightly as Sarah held the porcelain doll baby that was her constant companion.
That was author Elwin Cotman reading from Dance on Saturday. Find more information about that and more books by authors around the Bay Area at klw.org/newarrivals. And before we go, we'd like to wish all our Muslim listeners a very happy Eid al-Adha. And we're going to leave you with the music of Oakland Muslim hip-hop artist Aaliyah Sharif.
We covered, we draped up.
Aaliyah Sharif.
You never gonna faze us.
My girls rock.
We still get this paper.
My girls rock.
You mess or you hate us. Every city, my girls, we rock. Every city, my girls, we rock. We rock. Every city, my girls, we rock. Every city, my girls, we rock. We rock. Every city, my girls, we rock. Every city, my girls, we rock.
We rock.
Every city, my girls, we rock. Every city, my girls, we rock.
I ain't no Taliban, just counting bands. My girls rock. Tell a friend. Think we all press. Try to hold a hand.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Christopher Agusa, Imran Ali Malik, Truk Nguyen, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Babette Thomas. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.